Welcome and thanks for listening. My name is Susan Daffron, and I'm the president of Logical Expressions, Inc., which is a book and software publishing company based in Idaho. I'm also the president of the Small Publishers, Artists, and Writers Network, otherwise known as SPAWN. So thanks for joining us. Today we're talking to Cherie Alexander. She's a professional speaker, speechwriter, and presentation coach. She's helped many authors improve their book sales by selling at the back of the room. And this is a proven technique that we as authors and book publishers can use to create a connection with our readers, establish a brand, and become recognizable in the author in your target market. So welcome, Cherie. This is a great topic, the whole concept of building buzz by speaking. And I know a lot of people are really interested in expanding into it, but there's sometimes a few fears that we have to get over.
Well, sure. Well, thank you for having me, and I'm looking forward to talking about this because it is, to me, for both building my two businesses and then working with my clients, I have found understanding the speaking world and using it as a promotional and marketing device for your product, your service, your books has been one of the best ROIs any marketing that we've done when it comes to somebody that has content. With the Expert Message Group, the company that we have for publishing and speaking and branding for speakers and authors, what we like to say is that we help at subject matter experts with the spreading of their good ideas. And one of the best ways you can do that is through getting out onto a platform of some sort and conquering the world of speaking. So I'd like to go ahead and open up with just a few concepts of what I mean by the speaking world and making sure we're all on the same page and I'm defining it clearly. Because I don't want anybody out there on the phone call to think that, oh my gosh, there's no way I don't want to go out on one of those national speaking tours and there's no way that I can make money at that and I'm too nervous and there's no way I want to sit in an arena or stand in front of thousands of people in an arena of some sort. While that is completely within the realm of possibilities, I'm talking more about bringing it down to the grassroots level first. And so what I mean about speaking is, yes, it could mean being a paid professional speaker, but it also can mean getting out into your community and being involved in different things. So let's talk about the basic baby step when it comes to speaking. In every single person's community, there is a chamber of commerce. There are different chapter-level associations all throughout their community, and it's only a Google search away to find these type of associations. There's your churches. There's different other interest groups that are out there. You can look at meetup.com and see if there's any small gatherings. And these are places where you are unlikely to get a fee for your speech. But it's one way to simply get out there and talk about what you do that's fantastic and provide some sort of content, something that helps the audience out with whatever need, whatever pain, whatever issue you are solving. And then you have about 45 minutes to an hour to deliver, and then people get to answer Q&A. I would even say that this phone call right now, I would categorize as me speaking because it's talking to a target market. These are people that are interested in what my company can do for them possibly, but instead of spending 45 minutes promoting about how fantastic Expert Message Group is, instead I'm going to give away my knowledge for free at this moment, and who knows if I develop any rapport with anybody there, then they might check our website out and look into, as you did before, Susan, our blog that we keep updated pretty regularly. And so it's viewing speaking as a format to help others in order to start a relationship. What speaking is not is your chance to do a 45-minute infomercial, and if you buy now, get the second one free. That's not what we're talking about. And so a few first things when it comes to the writers on this phone call and publishers out there who are wanting to promote their authors is, let's start with the basics of whatever your content is. If you're wanting to help, for instance, one of our clients is wanting to help young widows, and another one is a Green Beret who's wanting to help people become more productive in the workforce. Another one's talking about finances. So whatever your topic is, you need to have a clearly defined target market. As much as we love our content and how brilliant we think we are, and we want to say so much, oh, but everybody could use this. Everyone will love what I have to say. This can change everyone's lives. Everyone is a really bad marketing strategy.
Yeah.
And exactly. And so you need to have that defined target market. And when you do figure that out, then it's a simple Google search away of association, insert your target market, and by location. You can do by your city, your state, you know, the entire U.S. if you want. And there are, of course, lists that you can purchase online to get into direct contact with individuals. But personally, I think if you're savvy on Google, the world is your oyster. And so then once you understand how the type of groups that you can reach out to for when it comes to speaking, the next step is, what in the world am I going to talk about? And as I said, you certainly don't want to stand up there and hold up your book and say, oh, this is fantastic, and in Chapter 5 I talk about this, and blah, 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 blah. That's boring. Everybody needs to have their main focus in their speech being about the audience. What is pain that I am curing? What is the problem that I am solving for them? And some key things that you need to have in your speech are, first of all, you need to do some prep work. I'm not a fan of people that just get up there and wing it, as fantastic as they think they are when they wing it. I bet you that if they saw a video recording of them winging it, they would go, oh, my gosh, I had no idea that I said that or did that. And I know this for a fact because this is what I do with my clients all the time. And so doing some prep work is pretty important, whether it's figuring out bullet points for your speech or for some individuals having the full script memorized and everything in between. So figuring what are the three main points that I want my audience to walk away with. And it can be 1 point and it can be 5 points, but really and truly less is more in this kind of situation. The three main takeaways of when they walk out of that room, they're going to say, wow, I have a whole new perspective on X. And then what you want to do is find some stories, some examples that illustrate what it is that you're talking about, those three main points. And from that point, honestly, right there, you have a speech. If you find a strong opening and a strong conclusion, bada bing, bada boom, as they say, you got a speech. Now, there's, of course, different levels as to how good that speech is, and, of course, there is a lot of minutia in between all of that. But just to understand this basic momentum of getting up on the platform, finding your target market, reaching out, and having a speech in hand. So now let's get to the icing on the cake, is how do I turn this opportunity of getting out there and speaking and delivering this content into book sales and future business. So within your speech itself, you want to have, let's say, two very short blurbs about your book. And you don't want to, please, people, please do not read from your book. Please don't. It's overdone, it's corny, and it makes you look bad. So if anybody's done that cardinal sin, it's all right. We all forgive you. Just don't do it again. But instead of reading from your book, what I would highly recommend is perhaps tell a story of what somebody came and told you about what happened in their life when they read your book, how reading your book improved their life. That is a fantastic way to sell your book from the form, because it's, you're not standing up there saying, here's my book, and holding up, and by the way, it's only $14.95, and talking about how you wrote the book. You don't want that. Instead, you want to share something about how you impacted, how your book impacted the life of another, Because the beauty of that is that you are not saying my book is fabulous. Instead, you are saying that somebody else said that your book is fabulous. So while you're on the platform, it's almost as if you're giving a referral through the character that you're sharing on stage. Does that make sense?
Yeah, actually, it really does. One thing I was wondering is if another way to do sort of the same thing, it's like, say you have a brand new book and it's the first speech you're doing about your book, is another thing that seems like it might be possible would be to tell a story that's in your book. Like, in my book, I say XYZ, and then, you know, sort of refer to it, but kind of give people a little taste of what they could get if they spent the $14.95 without going, hey, look, it's great, it's $14.95.
Yes, exactly. That is absolutely right. So in addition to that referral technique, you can absolutely pull, because your speech needs story, so why not use a story within your book? So you can say, in fact, in my book, when I illustrate this point, I talk about X, Y, and Z, and go into the actual story itself from the book. So remember when I said about two blurbs that you can work with in your speech? Well, there's your two. One, actually use an example from your book, and then two, using some sort of testimonial referral from somebody else talking about your book. And that's enough, because if you're good on the platform, then people will want more of you by buying your book. And this is really where my business partner and I, where our company really came into fruition, is she comes from the publishing world and I come from the public speaking world. And the people in those two industries really understand that every speaker needs a book because it's an added revenue source. Mm-hmm. And then every author should be speaking, because a fabulous thing happens when you get up on the platform and you're speaking in some way, is that you develop rapport. You have a relationship, not just one-on-one with an individual or virtually with people online. Instead, you have a rapport with 20, 50, 100, a couple hundred, yes, even possibly 1,000 people all at once. And when you have that relationship, that's when they want more and they want your book. But if you don't mention your book from the platform, if you completely forget it altogether, then you're killing your possible book sales from that event. So don't be too nice about, oh, I don't want to mention it, and oh, I don't want to sell or anything. No, you should be selling, because if you believe in your content and you believe that this will help people, then you should be mentioning it in some way when you get the opportunity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And if you don't believe in your book, who will?
Right, exactly. And then the next tip that I have for everyone is make the purchase easy. So depending on your printing model, of course, well, actually, no, that's not even true. Your ROI of selling your books at the back of the room is always better than selling it on Amazon or Barnes & Noble or getting it on the bookshelf, because those people always get their cut first before you get the money. But if you have purchased your own copies and you've done an offset run, or if you're on print on demand, however it is, you're not going through that middleman of Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and things like that, then you, when you sell your book at the back of the room, you're getting more of a takeaway. So that leads to two very interesting things. One, it makes it much more appealing to go out and speak possibly for a fee or even for free, because you know that you're going to be getting some revenue from it anyway, and it really doesn't cost you anything except for the gas to get to the event. And two, if your ROI is already, your margins are already bigger because you're going to be selling at your speaking event, then I always highly recommend offering a discount for your book as that one-time purchase. So if you purchase now, instead of the book being $14.95, it's $10 even. And the reason why I say make the purchase easy is I like round numbers when I'm speaking at events, because it's easy for people to pull out a $20 bill or a $10 bill or even, you know, $15, because it's easy to make change. Don't worry about your 95s and your, you know, $11.98 or anything along those lines. Make it a nice round number to make the purchase easy and seamless, because as you're handing out the change, you want to keep it very quick, because people are going to, they should be lining up at the back of the room to be purchasing your book, and you don't want anybody waiting too long and walking away. Also,
yeah,
you want to have a purchase order form. That's very important. So let's say you run out of your books at the back of the room and you say, oh, now can I get a book to you? Sorry, we're out. So sad. Always have a book purchase order form there that you can take down their information, take their money, take down their credit card, get a check, anything along those lines, and then you can ship it to them after the event. So have that prepared as well.
Yeah.
So far, so good?
Yeah, and actually, I can personally attest to the making it a round number. That's a huge deal. My books normally retail for $19.95, and when I've spoken at a conference, I put up big signs in front of my stacks of books and said, you know, special show discount, only $15, and I didn't figure out tax, didn't figure out anything. I figured I'd just,
mm-hmm,
you know, deal with that later. But the experience of having people foisting 20s at you is really gratifying.
Absolutely.
Because, and then you
absolutely
just get a whole bunch of fives, and you're just handing back fives and books. And
exactly.
The nice thing is
having that book at the back of the room as well is, especially if you're able to be at the back of the room and actually being there for the point of purchase. Sometimes people come up to you up at the platform and you're not able to, and your assistant will be the one that takes care of the books. Mm-hmm. But if you are able to get there at the back of the room, people love the experience, and authors know this. They love the experience of getting the autographed copy. And this
yeah
world, especially as flat as this world is becoming and as close as we can be to our mentors and our idols and the people that inspire us, that opportunity to see the speaker, talk to the author for that little moment of when they buy the book, that lasts a really long time. And that relationship that you just created by taking those few minutes will impact your business forever and ever, because they will remember that moment. And another thing, as we were talking about the round numbers, for the authors out there that have multiple books or multiple products even, another very good tip is to bundle your packages, bundle your products. So don't just piece out, oh, well, the book is this, and the CD is this, and the DVD is that, and that book is this. Create some packages and bundle them together, so that way if they buy them, then they get a price break. Because so many studies have shown that people will go for the bundle more often than they will for the single item. And so that's even more return on your investment of getting up and speaking for just a few minutes, and people will buy the bigger bundle. So it's another thing I would highly recommend to everybody is don't just itemize every single item that you might have out there. Put together your bronze, silver, and gold package, or your super succeeder package, and your just beginning to be awesome package, or anything along those lines.
Yeah, that's a good idea too.
So that's sort of the basics of understanding your target market, reaching out to them, getting on the platform, delivering your speech, and then how to turn that speech into more product sales. And another tip I will add to this is always get their information. Get their mailing address if you do mail marketing. Get their email address for sure. And make sure that there's a box in your sign-up form of some sort saying, well, might reach out to you for promotional and won't sell your information to any third parties, some sort of disclaimer along those lines, and they can always opt out of it. But that way, if you spent all this time to develop that moment for a relationship, don't just let it go away. Keep in touch with these people. If they have sat through your entire speech and if they have divvied up by paying to read more of your content, why would you let them just walk away? They have clearly stated, I am interested. I like this. I like what you're doing. So be sure to make it a part of your marketing plan to send out your mail postcards or send out your e-zine or add them to your social media. There's so many other spin-off opportunities in your marketing strategy after that one event.
So how, what would be a way, this is something that people have asked me, and there's a, I've seen a number of different approaches to this. With email, normally, you know, like, for example, the Spawn newsletter list is just one of many, but it's a double opt-in list. So if I went and spoke about Spawn to people, then how would I get them on the email list? Because in order for them to really get on the list, they'd have to give me my email address, which at the back of the room, unless you give them some sort of carrot, how will you incentivize them to part with their email address first? And then if they actually do, and sometimes at conferences you see like a fishbowl where you throw your business card in and you win something. So that's how some people get it. But again, you have this double opt-in issue, which most people who have lists now, you kind of have to do that in order to keep from being labeled a spammer.
Sure. So it's kind of a two-part question, so I'll take it with that first part that you mentioned. How do I get people to part with their email address? Fantastic question. So here's a few ways. One, of course, at the point of purchase of your product, you should be gathering up their information, having some sort of form that they're filling out while you're taking their information or making change, something along those lines. The other way is from the platform. There's a few techniques that I personally have used and know other speakers use fairly regularly. One is you can gather up, get a fishbowl, have everybody put in their business card, get passed around the room, and they put in their business card, and there is a drawing for something cool. Certainly make sure that it's not something lame or else they won't put in their business card. And say from the platform, and of course, if you're putting in your business card, I will be adding you to this e-zine list. And if you do not want me to, simply mark off your email address, and you will not be added. So you're still being the nice guy of, you can still win this really cool prize, but you don't have to be put on the e-zine list. That's one way. Another way that I've used before, and good friend and client of mine is Darren LaCroix, who's a fabulous public speaker. He taught me the technique of the clipboard, which is, it's a simple sign-up clipboard. Here's my name, here's my number, here's my email address. And at some point in his speech, he gives a little spiel about, by the way, I have a free e-zine. You'll get monthly tips from me. It's also kind of funny. It'll liven up your day. If you're interested, please put your name on this form, and you'll be added to it. So there's the clipboard one. You can also have evaluation sheets or some other sign-up forms at the seat of at every seat in the room, and they can fill that out there. On my evaluation forms, when I use them, at the bottom I have a little blurb about what the e-zine is, how they can sign up. That's one of my favorite techniques personally, because my e-zine form is also research, it's an information gathering research tool for me for my marketing purposes. So personally, I like the evaluation form. And so those are a few ways that you can definitely get that information. And you can start doing this, by the way, before you even have your product. You can do this especially if you're in the midst of writing your book. You use this to pre-sell your book. It's a beautiful thing of having hundreds of copies sold before your book even exists. Mm-hmm. And so be sure to add that as well on any of these forms, is have a new book coming out. It's coming out at the end of December. Here's what it is. If you're interested, fill out this form and you get a 25% discount or name your price kind of a thing. So that's your first question. The second question is the double opt-in. I will say that we do not use a double opt-in. I'm not a huge fan of it. So I personally don't have too much experience with this, because all of our material and all of my clients' material actually has the option to unsubscribe at all times. And that's really the main legal issue that a lot of people run into, is making sure that you can unsubscribe and that you don't sell their information. For the double opt-in, again, for them to say, oh, yes, I did sign up for that, add me to this list, is incentivize them again. By the way, don't forget to opt in again for this, and you'll receive a fabulous video, ebook, Starbucks $5 gift card, anything along those lines, just to catch their attention. I understand the beauty of double opt-in is because then you know it is a very rich list. They have said multiple times that they are interested. So I do like the double opt-in for that. But just so you don't lose anybody, I would say offer them another incentive to make sure that they don't just forget about it.
Yeah, and that's a good point. And with certain systems, like, for example, AWeber, you can create a separate list for a particular speaking engagement so that you could, when you load them in, it would have a double opt-in message that was specific to that speaking engagement, where the email said, hi, I met you at, you know, my talk at the Kiwanis Club the other day, and you had asked to be added to my list, and when you click this link, you're going to get my fabulous free report, 7 ways mm-hmm. to promote your widget. And mm-hmm. then they go, oh, yeah, I did do that, and are more likely to click the link.
Right. Exactly.
That makes sense.
What other questions might be lingering on out there that I can help out with?
Well, one thing I thought of or came across on your blog, which I thought was really great, you wrote something, I forget what the name of the post was, but you said, speakers and authors are pulled in two different directions. On the one hand, they want to feel the exhilaration and joy of sharing their message and helping others, but on the other hand, they face the discomfort and, in some cases, the excruciating pain at the prospect of being vulnerable and showing their authentic self. And mm-hmm. I was thinking, because this is an excellent point, I thought, because a lot of authors are real introverts, and so that dichotomy is really difficult to resolve. And what about authors who are, I mean, the idea of speaking is just sort of horrifying, although, I mean, it really is a good way to establish your platform. I mean, we've all read this, but, and I'm sure you've worked with clients, how do you help them get over that hump?
Sure. So there's a few different levels. The most common one, I'll start with that, is what is just simply commonly known as stage fright. That's a very broad term, because stage fright for individuals just varies on that individual. Stage fright can mean, oh, I get a little bit of butterflies before I go on stage. Well, in that case, I get stage fright every time I step on the platform. Those butterflies never go away, and quite frankly, they should never go away, because you should be a little scared and excited every single time. And in the moment, honestly, that you're not, you either need to stop or you need to start doing something else with your program, because that's when the passion, your heart, has gone out of the process a little bit. Mm-hmm. And you see this with actors all the time. They've been doing movies forever, and they say, oh, I just want to tap back into my roots and then go on Broadway. And those actors, because I used to be one. So you see this all the time. So that's one level of stage fright. The other level, all the way to the top, is where people are completely just not able to move, and they are throwing up backstage. So there's that and everything in between. What I do with clients and in our workshops is we work on a number of different relax techniques. And there's also meditative techniques that you can use. It's hard to go too into detail with that. But I will say that if you do experience stage fright, any client that has come to me with that issue has walked away with that issue resolved. So there is no hopeless case. Personally, that's 100% what I believe is there is no hopeless case when it comes to stage fright. I find that the stage fright concern really stems from a perspective of you against the audience or the audience against you, meaning they're going to be there judging me, they're going to, what if they don't like what I say, and somehow in the back of our mind, just by thinking, if they don't like what I have to say, we get this image of Rotten Tomatoes are going to be thrown at us and the book is going to come out, and just this horror story picture that we paint in our mind, whether we're aware of it or not. And I have a blog article that is coming out in the next few weeks about something I actually witnessed just a week and a half ago. I was at the National Speakers Association National Conference, and I've been involved in that association on part of the speaker magazine and all that good stuff. And never in my life have I seen somebody really, I mean, really bomb on stage. And in our world, bomb means something went bad.
Yeah.
And I won't say her name, but this one woman, bless her heart, she's standing in front of hundreds of people who are in her industry, who are rock stars, and this is her time to be on the platform of the National Speakers Association. This is kind of the holy grail of our industry.
Yeah.
And at some point, something happened, and it just bombed. She forgot what she was going to say. She couldn't follow her PowerPoint. She forgot her entire speech. You could hear it in her voice. She started tearing up at one point because she was so embarrassed. I'm not going to lie, it was a heart-wrenching thing to watch. But we are so worried about what if the bad thing happens, that then the audience is going to hate me and they're going to talk bad about me and all this terrible stuff. But do you know what happened at the event when that happened with her on stage? The audience started to cheer for her. The audience started to clap and cheer her on and say it's okay, and they rallied around her to say, it's all right, it happens, you know, just push through, go through. They weren't going to let her give up. I thought that was an absolute beautiful moment of, even if the worst happens, audiences are not terrible people. Will they remember it? Will they talk about it? Yes, of course. But it will never be, wow, what a freaking idiot she is. Oh, my God, who is she? That was terrible. She should never step on stage ever again. That's not anything like what everybody was talking about. It was more like, wow, I feel so bad for her, and I'm happy it didn't happen to me. But there was no judgment there's no judgment on her as to how, you know, how horrible person she is, because she's human. We're all human. So I think starting with that mindset of the audience really and truly is rooting for you. And keep in mind, they may not be rooting for you in an altruistic way. They're rooting for you because they want a good experience. They want the knowledge. They want to feel the feelings. They want to get involved. So they're rooting for you because they want to have a good time. So what I do also, in addition to some of those relaxation techniques and breathing techniques I teach clients, is one really good tip is to, on your iPod, have some pumped up music playing right before you go on. So, you know, get into Rocky and play Eye of the Tiger and anything else you need to really jazz yourself up. That always helps. And every time before I step on the platform, I always think to myself, it's all about them. Because it's not all about me. It's not about me and my content. It's all about them. I am here to help them. I'm here to connect with them. And when my energy and my focus goes out to the audience, and my energy, and it's kind of a visual of, I just feel like this energy sweeps across the room in front of me, and my focus is on them, that's when I have my absolute best experiences. it's in the early days when I thought I was just a little bit too big for my britches, and I got up on the platform and talk about how amazing I am and what I do. Oh, my gosh, those speeches were terrible. I should have been embarrassed by those. But once you say to yourself, it's all about them, I'm here for them, and your focus goes out with that helpful energy, I think that means that we are opening ourselves up as speakers to give our all, but also receive, because speaking really and truly is a conversation. You do see reactions with people, and you connect with individuals, and you see when a point really hits home with one person, and you see when somebody kind of has a quizzical look on their face and they didn't quite understand it, so you explain it further. That's the conversation of speaking, but you don't see that, and you don't connect with the audience in that way if it's all about you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I just read something really similar to the story that you had about the person who bombed at the NSA, which is it was a person who had done speaking and had been doing it for a while, and then he went and it wasn't like a big speech or something, but he absolutely, completely, and totally froze. It's like he said that his mind went blank, and he couldn't remember anything. And his wife was in the audience, and she said, "We're going to take a 10-minute break." And so in the middle of the speech, and it was like everyone was like, okay. So, you know, they're like, whatever. And so he went off stage for a second, got his brain back together, came back on, and, you know, our little 10-minute break is over. And then everything was fine. And apparently he went and he was like, wow, thank goodness that's over. And then it happened again, except that he wasn't able to take a break for some reason. And he actually, he froze to the point where he actually had to leave. And he was so committed that he basically contacted the organization, said, bring everybody back, I'm going to do it over. And I just thought that's kind of where, you know, the rubber meets the road, kind of, where you decide, again, the audience didn't get from me what they wanted. I didn't finish what I was supposed to say because I froze. And so he actually did. He went back, he invited everyone back for free, and he made it through the whole thing, and everyone was just sort of like blown away that he had had A, the guts to do that, and B, was willing to do it and not just sort of crawl back into a hole and you know, have a pity party, basically.
Right. It really does build a lot of character. Personally, I think in every single speech there will always be something that you look back on and go, oh, man, I could have really done that better. I could have pitched my book better, and oh, man.
Mm-hmm.
And then also in every speech there will be, I rocked that out. High five.
Yeah.
There is very rarely those moments that you hit the home run, and it's just like baseball. When you do hit the home run, that is a great feeling. But what is a good batter's average? Like 0.3 something or other?
300 or something, yeah.
Yeah, so 30% of the time, and that's just for a hit. So it's about the same in speaking, generally speaking. Now, for professional keynoters, their home runs should be more like in the 90%. Trainers and workshop leaders, it's going to be a little bit lower because there's always that factor of you really are opening up the dialogue with the audience, and there is always the element of the unexpected. One of my dear friends and mentors, and actually a client, Jim Stovall, who's an Emmy Award-winning executive, and he's written a New York Times bestseller, he and I will have lunch every once in a while, and recently he said, you know, Cherie, because he's the superstar keynoter. He is the guy on the platform. Every time I see him, I laugh, I cry. He's amazing. Myself, while I do keynote speeches, clients really do bring me in more for the training, the hands-on, the workshop kind of an experience. And it blew me away, and it opened my eyes when he said one day over lunch, he said, Cherie, could never do what you do. And that's just sort of when, like, I tilted my head like a dog. I was like, what?
What?
You're amazing. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
And he says it's that element of the unexpected and knowing what's coming and being able to be quick on your feet. He has taken something and polished it, and it is amazing. To this day, it's one of the best I've ever seen. I don't know if it can be topped. But that's where his strength is. And it is amazing to realize, wow, somebody like that can look at somebody like me and say, you have a different strength than I do. And as speakers, we need to really understand that is your strength may not be somebody else's strength, but somebody else's strength may not be your strength. Your strength is your strength. You own that. So if you are the keynoter, great. If you are the trainer, great, and leading workshops. If you are the shy author who maybe is a little bit more dry sense of humor, oh my gosh, do some research on YouTube and watch dry humor comics. And it just you actually can be monotone and seemingly boring, but be hysterical.
Mm-hmm.
So understand what your strengths are and play to them and diminish your weaknesses.
Yeah, that's a good way to look at it. It really is. So when we're going out to, I know you started to, you said when you're starting out, it's okay to speak for free. You can start in your local area. How do you start approaching people
for money?
Well, money's nice too, but I mean even if you're really just starting out, and even the free ones, it's like
okay.
You go up to the Chamber of Commerce and go, yo, hey, I can talk about whatever.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah. So it's pretty simple and straightforward. Personally, I did a phone call route back when I started, just because when I started, I was broke and didn't have money to do a mail campaign. And so you do your Google search, you find the contact person for these associations, and generally it's going to be your VP of programming or programs, something along those lines. And you will get an email address or a phone number. Personally, I would do the phone call and say, I'm interested in your association and what you do, and I think I might have a program. I'll slow down here because people might take notes, and I know I speak fast sometimes. So this is your script. This is your script right here. Is I'm interested in your association and what you do. I think I might have a program that could be a good fit, and I would love the opportunity to talk with you to learn more. Do you have any time available in the next week? So I don't cold call and instantly expect to do my sales pitch. I'm calling to set up an appointment for a casual conversation. And then when you get to that casual conversation, you ask questions. So what type of programs have you brought in the past? Who was amazing? Who didn't do so well? And you're not asking those questions to get names. You're asking those questions to find out what for this audience. Are they more content rich? Do they want more rah-rah motivational stuff? What is it that really lands well with this group?
Mm-hmm.
And how often do you meet is a question. Where do you meet? What do you look for in a speaker? And then your golden question is, do you use paid professional speakers? Not professional speakers, paid professional speakers, because sometimes we'll say, oh, yeah, we bring in professional speakers all the time, and we haven't paid for any of them. That, to me, is not professional speaking. That's amateur speaking. And so you have to use that word paid, because then you might, if they say yes, then, oh, you have an opportunity to, get $500 if it's a local association or something. And if they say no, you say, okay, great. If you think my program is a good fit, here's just a few things that I would like in lieu of a fee. And that's when you ask things along the lines of, I'd like my seminar to be posted up on social media. I'd like an article put in your e-zine, anything along those lines, just to create more PR, more exposure for yourself. And so, of course, when you call them, you need to understand, you need to know what your program is. So have just a few talking points, just being able to really sell your program. And by sell your program, I mean telling them what how you will improve the lives of the audience members. People will walk away and they will know X, Y, and Z. People will walk away and feel X, Y, and Z. They will do X, Y, and Z. So how do you want them to think, feel, or act differently at the end of the program? And those are your bullet points that you share with the meeting planner. Mm-hmm. And so then you send up some follow-up emails. You'll probably put in your program description, your speech title. They'll ask for a brief bio. Please don't make your bio 5 pages long. You're not that important. make it brief. Make it just a brief paragraph. And possibly they may ask for a headshot of some sort. All of these, you don't need to get too fancy with this stuff when you're just starting out. Just make sure it's ideally a high-resolution photo, ideally not a photo of you at a birthday party. Just use some common sense when it comes to that stuff. So that's how I did it. That's the phone call route. The other route is you can do a mail campaign. I personally am not a fan of direct mail campaigns when it comes to reaching out cold to individuals, because if you get 1% of the people to open up your mail and show interest, that's a home run mail campaign. I just simply don't like those numbers. Yeah. But it doesn't mean that you can't do it and you can't rock it out. You absolutely can. And
people do.
And speaking possibly for free, personally, I would just say use your Google search and reach out via email or phone call.
Mm-hmm. So how do you feel about, for example, I live in a town of 7,000 people. My speaking opportunities are quite limited. So most of the speaking I do is actually via teleseminar and, you know, things like this because, well, mm-hmm. I am close to nobody. So is that it's a limitation of living in the middle of nowhere, but
we're all nobodies. Just some
yeah. Yeah, I'm not close to anyone. I don't get out much. But there definitely is less connection. You know, you don't get the same level of interaction that you do in a live presentation. So, but for people who are starting out, do you think that that can be sort of a first step, or for people like me who live in the middle of nowhere, to try and get essentially teleseminar or webinar speaking engagements? Can they be, you know, helpful to, you know, further your message and get it out there, or is it really important to be in person in people's face?
In person is definitely your best option, just mm-hmm. because it opens up much more interaction. Up to 80% of what we communicate is through nonverbal communication. And so when you are only searching to do a campaign of teleseminars or webinars, you are cutting off a big chunk of pure human-to-human communication.
Mm-hmm.
Not that that's a bad thing. It's just you need to be aware of that.
Yeah.
And so that is why face-to-face is your number one option. I have driven, I'd say, up to 5 hours just to go to one free speaking engagement. So that is the one thing I would say is be willing to get out there. You may burn some gas, but if you get there and you sell a couple hundred copies of your book, or heck, for some people, 20 copies is a good return on investment. Or for us, and you also need to be aware of what your ratio is of turnaround business after a speaking engagement.
Mm-hmm.
I know for myself personally, about depending on the audience size, I can get up to a third of the audience doing business with me after I speak. So you need to watch those numbers. X number of people were in the audience. X number of people bought my book. X number of people hired me as a coach. X number of people were interested in booking me for another speech. And so that way you know if you're improving, if you're not doing enough, because if you're only closing, if only less than 5% of the people in the audience are interested in doing business with you or interested in your book, then something's not right. and you need to improve your speaking ability, your pitch, who knows what. And that's really where your third-party coach can come in handy. But that, people say, well, how do you know if you're a good speaker? That's the way, is if you're getting business every time after you speak, then you know something's working. So that face-to-face time is pretty important. Teleseminars are a good backup. Webinars are a good backup. But I would say be willing to definitely go outside of your market. I've been to all the bordering states when I first started and did free speaking engagements because I knew it may be free to begin with, but I'll probably walk away with a couple $1,000s because somebody hired me to do something else because mm-hmm. I went to that free engagement.
Yeah, and that's a good way to look at it, that it's if you can close some business, particularly those authors who are also consultants. I mean, sometimes, you know, there's a difference between selling a $20 book and selling, you know, several thousand dollars worth of consulting. That's
right.
You know, that can really start leveraging your time and your gas money to get there.
Going back to those basics, again, is knowing who your target market is, who your perfect demographic is, then when those free engagements come around, you know which ones you'll just turn down and say, I'm sorry, that's not a good fit for me. And then others that you'll say, oh, yeah, sure, I'll speak to them for free. That's my ideal group. They hire me all the time. One thing that surprised me after being in business for a while was that apparently I don't understand why, but it happened that my IT people love me. I don't understand, but I was hired to come in and do just a quick little spiel for a PC users group, and from that I just got company after company calling me saying, we need to bring you in for our IT people and our this IT group and that IT group. I was like, what are you talking about? Sure, I'll do it, but I don't understand why. So
that's
sometimes
really
what you think may – yeah, sometimes what you think may be your perfect fit, because I also spoke in front of a financial advisors group once and thought, oh, okay, I can connect with these guys. Oh, my gosh, worst speech of my life.
Oh no.
An interesting
point is what was your sort of back-end services that you were selling? Was it related to IT?
No, oh goodness, no. Everything that I've always sold has always been the same. It's been the coaching, consulting, and speaking on anything under the communications umbrella. So interpersonal communications, influential communications, body language, public speaking, and leadership communications. That the entire time, even with both of these businesses that I've started, that entire time my core has been that. And that's another thing is know your core. Because anytime something comes along the lines as something that's not a good fit, don't take it. You'll regret it. You'll walk away and go, man, I really shouldn't have spoken on that topic. I really didn't know what I was talking about. Refer it out to somebody else. Spread the love. Hand it over to another speaker, author, consultant, friend, and say, I'm not a good fit, but this person is. I hate talking about customer service. I hate it with a passion. I'm not good at it. I don't like what people preach about it. I'm the worst person, but I get asked at least 5 times a year by people, could you speak on customer service? And I say, no.
Yeah.
I say, but here's 5 people that can.
Because I found them because I want to refer somebody.
Exactly. I just spread the love.
That's interesting. You know, I wonder if the IT crowd, a lot of nerds that I've met, and I'm married to a programmer, so I can say nerd without offending
so you know.
A lot of them feel that they aren't good communicators. So that kind of does make sense that you just sort of bumped into turned out to be such a good one.
Right, it does make sense. But when I first started, I never
thought. Yeah, I can see why it would be like, what?
Exactly. So,
yeah.
I mean, go ahead and veer a little outside of that comfort zone. Of course, everybody wants to speak to the CEO group. Duh, everybody wants that because they know that these are the guys with the checks. But yeah. you still want to veer, you have your bullseye target, and then you have one ring outside of that. Go ahead and take those engagements. You have one ring outside of that. I don't know, take half of those, and then the ring outside of that, pass that on to somebody else.
Mm-hmm. So here's an interesting question that came up on something that I read on your blog was, do you need to memorize your speeches?
Okay, sure. And since we're on here, just since we've mentioned the blog a few times, I wouldn't mind if you, or I hope you don't mind if I just go ahead and mention that website so while people are listening, they can check out the blog and see what you're referring to.
Yeah.
That is at expertmessagegroup.com. And then right there on the homepage, you have the tab straight to the blog. So, mm-hmm. And there we have articles on anything in regards to publishing, speaking, branding, marketing, and social media. So feel free to check those out as well for anybody that's on the call. So on, I'm sorry, I got a little sidetracked there.
Yeah,
repeat the question.
But it was
there,
a good point.
To repeat that question for me of what you saw on the blog.
It was basically whether or not people need to memorize their speeches. Because, for example, like I stink at memorizing. I could never memorize anything in school, and I don't know how actors mm-hmm. do it. And I wish I knew because, you know, obviously it's better when you're doing a presentation if you're not sitting there with, you know, the classic cliche of the person sitting there with their 3x5 cards looking petrified. It obviously mm-hmm. is so much cooler if you can memorize it, but do people,
right.
how do people do that, and is that a good idea?
Yeah, memorization is always, here's the phrase that is used in my business, probably 90% of the time when talking to clients. Are you ready? Here's the magic phrase. Whenever I'm asked a question, this is what I usually say, it depends.
Yeah.
It depends on so many factors. Some people, you know, I would naturally want to say memorization absolutely must do it if you want to earn fantastic fees and get paid, you know, $10,000 and up per speech. And if you want to get more books sold and more bookings, you must memorize your speech. So there's that side. The other side of the coin is I know people who have memorized their speech and still deliver it terribly. It's when you can mm-hmm. see them reading the page across their forehead, you know, just always see the page, and they're saying it. So especially coming from an acting background, I understand the different levels of memorization, different techniques that work for different people. So when you ask, how do you memorize, here's my phrase of the day is, it depends. Some people are good with the words on the page. With all of my clients, especially when I am writing speeches for clients, I give them the 100% word-for-word script, and then I also send them an MP3 of me performing the speech so they have the audio that they can listen to because some people are better with audio. Mm-hmm. One big element that I think so many people who have not come from the acting world miss out on is body memory. And what I mean by that is performing and rehearsing your speech in your office, in your living room, out at the park and looking like a crazy person, but actually getting up on your feet and moving around and practicing your speech because your body holds a certain amount of memory of, oh, yeah, when I moved over here, I started talking about this, and when I gesture about this, it's a whole nother level of memorization. So that's one tip that I think a lot of people miss out on is actually moving around when practicing speech as opposed to just sitting on the couch and reading it. Because it shouldn't surprise anyone that if you're working on your speech, sitting down reading it on the couch, and then you stand up on the platform and you're delivering it in front of people, that your mind goes, wait, something's different. I can't remember
yeah.
anything.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of common sense when you put it like that, but so many people forget about, maybe I should make it as close to what the end performance will be like before the end performance happens. In the acting world, what we do is you do a cold read, or also known as a table read, where you sit around the table and everybody's just nose in their scripts, reading it word for word. You're not really acting it out much. You're just going through the script and timing it out, basically. Mm-hmm. Then you read it over, maybe with a little bit of more emotion. Then you get up on your feet in the rehearsal space, sometimes not in the rehearsal space, and or the performance space, and you still have your script in hand. Then you slowly put the script down, and you start practicing, and then you have the whole thing memorized, and now you're in the performance area, and then you add your costume, and then you add your set, and slowly, surely, it's more and more like the actual performance.
Yeah.
Speech rehearsals should be no different. In fact, the other day I was talking to a client, he came in for a session, and it may not seem like a big deal, but he came in wearing these sandals, and he walked differently. He was moving around completely differently, and he was losing track of what he was saying. And I said, next time and from now on, I want you to, I don't care what you're wearing from the ankles up, it could be a Hawaiian shirt for all I care, but I need you to come in with the shoes that you would speak in. And it makes such a difference. So women, this is very important to you, and as a woman, so I can say this, is rehearse in whatever shoes you're going to speak in. It's different when you're in flats versus if you are in heels. And if you're rehearsing in your heels and your feet are killing you within 3 minutes, don't wear those heels, because when you get up on stage, they will hurt your feet and you'll be distracted. Mm-hmm. And so don't be surprised by, oh, my gosh, now I can't even stand. I need to sit down. Well, too late. You're already up on the stage, honey.
This is very easy to imagine. I'm not good with heels. So, yes,
yep.
So me, I should never do a speech in heels. This is probably, you know, one of the three takeaways for me.
It's the small things that matter.
Yeah.
I have seen women. In fact, I wrote an article about it that was published in the UK. I did see a woman that after 10 minutes into her presentation, she said, oh, I'm sorry, my feet are killing me. Do you mind if I sit down? And she sat down the rest of the time.
Oh,
I was dumbfounded that, oh, so, yeah, it has happened. So don't be one of those people.
I believe it. Well, we're a little bit over, but just to sort of close this out, we should probably say something about how you can, once you've done your speech, it's, you know, how can people leverage their 15 minutes of fame that they get after their speech? What are some of the key things that you should do? I mean, one thing you suggested that's obvious and a good point is follow up, but beyond that, anything?
Well, I mean, following up really is your gold. If you just let an opportunity lie, then you're just putting money on the table, basically. So following with anybody that expresses interest, you can also always ask for referrals from your meeting planner saying, now that you've seen my program, do you know of any other groups or individuals that might be interested in this type of content? Do you mind if I reach out to them? Can I mention your name? Always gather up testimonials as well, because those mini referrals are just gold in our industry. Again, those referrals are saying, oh, this person knows what they're talking about. Put those testimonials up on your website, put them in your book, put them on your LinkedIn profile page, put them on, you know, get them to accumulate on Branch Out, which is an application within Facebook. Gathering up those testimonials is pretty key. The list. Gather up people's information and continue to touch base with them. The list in our industry is where our money comes from. Relationships and staying in touch with people is how we make our living. If we aren't in touch with people, our content isn't getting sold.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Well, I think that's a good place to wrap it up, and on a successful note, because at this point we are out of time, and I'd like to thank Cherie for taking the time to be here. And as we mentioned, her website is www.expertmessagegroup.com, and I found a lot of really interesting articles that elaborate on a lot of the things that we talked about here, so I encourage you all to go visit it. There's a lot of really great information, because obviously, speaking really is a great way to sell books. I know this personally. I've sold more books at one sitting by speaking than any other way I have. I mean, in a concentrated period of time, I guess you would say.
There you go.
It really works. So I encourage you to.
And if anybody on the call has any further questions or anything, I'm an open book, so feel free to reach out and email me. My email address is Sharie, it's spelled Shari, at expertmessagegroup.com. I'd be happy to answer any questions and help out any way I can.
That's great. Well, thank you again, Sharie, and this has been really,
thank you, Susan.
Really helpful. And thank
Excellent.
You so much for listening. So, yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.